Right, finally, agenda paper 16 does the last new issue for this month's meeting. We've received a submission about the reporting of foreign operations in Venezuela in a group's consolidated financial statements. We understand that the prevalent accounting practice is to use one of the official Venezuelan exchange rates as the closing rate for accounting purposes, even if this is only available for a very limited amount of currency in practice and doesn't reflect the local rate of inflation. The concerns reported to us are that because the official exchange rate used for accounting purposes is artificially low, the performance and position of the Venezuelan subsidiary looks to be better in the group accounts than it is in reality. We conducted some outreach, which indicated this is a pervasive issue for those entities with significant foreign operations in Venezuela, and also that similar issues arise for groups with foreign operations in Argentina and some African and Middle Eastern countries, but to a lesser extent. In particular, the facts and circumstances differ and evolve over time in each case by case basis. The concerns raised seem to me to primarily stem from the closing rate used on the application of IAS 21 in these particular circumstances, and therefore I've identified two primary issues. The first being, you know, which exchange rate should you use when there are multiple exchange rates out there, as in Venezuela? And secondly, what rate should be used when there's a longer term lack of exchangeability? And this will be the second point, which is actually the crux of this particular issue. But look at these two points in turn. Firstly, issue one on multiple exchange rates. IAS 21 already gives some guidance on multiple exchange rates for translating foreign currency transactions in your local entity accounts. But there's nothing in IAS 21 and no guidance for the translation of foreign operations into a presentation currency for consolidation. Our outreach indicates that the issue is widespread. It also indicated that as things are moving and the conditions in Venezuela are changing over time, there is diversity in practice, but it seems to be arising from different and changing and often unclear facts and circumstances. But when you look at the actual principle people are trying to apply, there appears to be very little or no diversity when they're looking at what exchange rate should you use to translate their net investment. And general practice seems to be to extend the existing principle we have for multiple rates in IAS 21, and that entities endeavour to use the rate at which they'll be able to remit funds from its foreign operations as a whole. For this reason, we think that the agenda criteria aren't met for issue one because of this lack of diversity in the principle being applied. Hence, we recommend that the committee doesn't take issue one onto its agenda. And so before moving on to issue two, it might be worthwhile just discussing that particular point and seeing whether you agree with our conclusions on do we need any guidance on multiple exchange rates for the translation of your net investment.
Bonnie?
I think on issue one, I do agree with the proposal not to take this on the agenda. I guess maybe two points that I would make is there isn't any consideration of using more than one rate. For instance, for different transactions, different rates and different exchanges may be accessed. So I don't know if that was thought about, but I'd maybe like to hear the answer to that. I guess the other point that I would make on the first item is that while I agree with the decision not to take it on the agenda, from my perspective, it's more along the lines of this is a very specific issue. Issuing guidance on this specific issue for this specific country, I think, could lead to some unintended consequences. So that didn't really come through here in the decision. So I think that ought to be addressed.
Martin?
I probably have a very specific view which we should discuss here.
The question is whether we really have different exchange rates, for example, in a country like Venezuela. We got different conditions for importing goods into Venezuela. That means, in a way, we have a kind of government grant of, or government's subsidy for importing specific goods. And we have some goods, for example, in the healthcare area, they have the highest priority, so they get a better exchange rate. But for this exchange rate, you have to apply. After importing, you have to apply, and then finally, if you are lucky, you get the money changed with another exchange rate. And this appears to happen for different products with different exchange rates. So the overall question is whether we have one exchange rate in Venezuela, which then probably is the one at the black market, or the one which is, well, the most unfavorable one, and whether the other areas are kind of, well, government grants, and that would imply to have another accounting solution for that. I'm arguing in this way because the overall question is what exchange rate could be used for translation. And if you consider that later on you intend to distribute dividends, how to get the cash out of this country, what exchange rate could be used? And then the only exchange rate which could be used, more or less, is the one with the worst exchange rate ever. So you have no additional advantage to get your cash out of Venezuela in forms of dividends and so on. So I would assume there is only one exchange rate. And the other issues are questions of subsidies, grants, and so on. And that would probably also overcome some challenges we have here. The other topic is the question on how does IRS 29 fit to IRS 21 if I have a fixed exchange rate regime, so to say. Because if I look at the exchange rate in Venezuela, in a way it is artificially set, and it is fixed for a while, and that was a topic, well, should be adjusted for inflation rates and so on. And what really happens is that while having the exchange rate fixed, you increase by the inflation index your sales and so on. So you boost more or less your turnover and whole income statement. And I guess what we could do as an interpretation committee is saying, okay, there is a presumption for IRS 29 that it only works if and only if you have a free floating exchange rate, because otherwise the whole philosophy of IRS 29 does not work. And you come to figures which are not in line with any economic background. And I believe for sure we need to do something on these two topics because they are of an extreme relevance for practice. Well, I know that also, in the meantime, then Enforcer starts to consider what could be done. And therefore, again, I guess guidance it would be very, very helpful and needed.
I think the question, I appreciate two observations you made there, two that sunk in with me. One is that some of the rates are not real, quote unquote. They are a form of subsidy for a particular transaction. So when you look at the array, you may only really real one. The second point, and this has come up again from discussions with the Emerging Economies Group, is that if you're going to do price level adjusted accounting at all, hyperinflation or otherwise, you have to have consistent assumptions between what you do for currency and what you do for inflation. Otherwise, it's a nonsense answer. As it happens, I think we do have research projects on both price level adjusted and foreign currency. I know the Koreans are working on foreign currency.
Well, I think we actually have three that are relevant here. We have some work that the Koreans did on foreign currency, we are bringing to the board soon, with some work that Glass have done on high inflation, not hyperinflation, because that's one of the issues. When it's 80% on average over 3 years, not 100%, what are you doing? Because they say it's equally valid. They want us to move the threshold. But the other one is there's a paper going, I think, I'm trying to think, it's this month or September, on cash flows and restrictions, and it's a general issue. If you think about, and it's a much quoted example of a large US corporate that if it transferred money out of, say, Ireland, for example, was hit with a fairly high tax bill if it did so, it's freely available. So there's no exchange rate problem, but there's essentially no restriction on the cash, but there are consequences of moving it. And we've been trying to look to see if we can draft something that would capture that type of a scenario restriction. You take a scenario here, it's almost, you could argue it's actually relatively freely transferable, but at a specified rate. And it's very difficult, we found, trying to write or suggest an amendment this would be to IS7 that actually covers this in a meaningful way, because now, some will argue, well, there's no restriction because I'm going to invest all my funds back in that country where the cash is actually sitting. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm okay. But we are looking at it, and we've actually, the UK board, the FRC, is doing some work on cash flows for us as well, and that should be feeding back in September. But this is, I think it's related to that kind of issue. It's, you've got some cash, how can you transmit funds around? We covered it in, we just looked at IFRS 12 with non-controlling interests, because that can limit in some jurisdictions the transferability of assets. We think it's a broader issue than just fixed exchange rates.
Yeah, the broader issue is very politically charged,
yeah,
because I'm sure some people would say, well, if you had just paid the tax you should have paid in the first place, you wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But instead, you chose to use a tax haven to shelter your earnings, yeah, and now you have a different issue.
Well, in this case, it's actually getting information for investors about difficulties you might have with funds in particular countries, and there's also the issue about what translation rates to use as well. So that they're kind of, they are linked in a sense, but we are trying to look at the cash flow issues and restrictions generally.
But again, I believe it's very important to discuss whether IRS 29 in such cases should be applied at all if you have artificial exchange rates. And this is a question right for now, and I mean it's already ongoing. We have it already since a longer time in the past, and everyone feels uncomfortable in applying it, and the result is not reflecting any economic view.
Yeah, and we're looking at IS 29 as well.
Yeah,
I think that's due to come back in either November, I think it is. We're trying to get it back at the table.
Yeah, and then, I mean, if we have it on the agenda in November or in October, would it help us for a year end or so? The question is, what should come? I mean, that's now from a preparer perspective, for sure, but probably also from an auditor's perspective. What should companies actually do? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an issue that can be tackled from two sides, and one is the exchange rate side, and the other is, you know, how you do inflation adjustments.
Yeah.
For this paper, I looked at the exchange rate side, because in a way, if you can fix that, then that might not mean you don't need to do anything with your inflation adjustments if you can bring the two more in line. So it's a question of chicken and egg, and which do you do first? And I thought for this meeting, it was worth initially looking at the closing rates and saying, look, can we do anything here? And then I think the next step is to look at, well, if we can't do anything there, what's the issue with the inflation accounting? But I do think it's a wider issue to do with how IS 29 works in totality, and it's a much broader issue than just this narrow, a sort of narrow scope thing that I think the Interpretations Committee could take on.
Martin raises a fair point, though, and it's not an unusual one for us to hear around this table. Companies have closings coming. What do they do? I don't know, but it would be worth us spending, since we have time this morning, a little time thinking about what either we could do, or given that the board can respond sometimes more quickly than this committee can, what the board might do to address this problem. Because Martin isn't the only one who's raised it. It's come to us a lot. Carl?
agree with Mark's comments, and I think further development is needed.
Tony?
To get back to Hannah's original question the question of what exchange rate do you use, I agree with the staff's recommendation. I think, in fact, there is very limited diversity in practice in the principle that's applied. You may get a different answer because facts and circumstances are different, but I think people are looking at the principle in IAS 21 to determine which exchange rate to use. And so I would agree with the staff's recommendation that we can't take that onto the agenda. I have a couple of thoughts on the agenda decision. I'm not sure what overstated from an economic perspective means, and I wonder whether we could clarify what the concern about overstatement is. I think we all know what it is, but I wonder if we could clarify. And I wonder, when we sort of move on to the broader questions, be very happy to have a debate about it. I understand the tension between IAS 21 and IAS 29. It's been there for a number of years, and people have dealt with it, primarily through disclosure, but it's been there for a number of years. So I don't think this year end is going to be any different to last year end, except that there are now more exchange rates that probably give you a better answer. So now we have three exchange rate mechanisms in Venezuela, at least for the time being. One of them gives you a better answer. So I'm not sure that the issue people will have this year end is any worse than it was last year or the year before or the year before. My sense is that if it's going to be addressed, it's a broader issue than we can deal with in the committee, because it's something that's going to require some major surgery on either 21 or 29 or both. And so if we're going to have a discussion, I guess it's around what might we suggest that the board picks up, but I think it is actually quite major surgery on either of those standards or both of them.
Okay, Bruce?
Yeah, thanks. I just have a couple of comments I want to make. The first one was, there was a comment earlier on whether this was just a Venezuelan issue. I mean, we've had this major issue with, many remember, with Zimbabwe for many years, where Zim had exactly this issue. At one stage made the Venezuelan problem look like a joke. I mean, we had inflation of 3,000% a day. So it was, it was ridiculous. So we have seen it in practice as to what's been done. The second comment I had was, whereas I don't disagree with the board rejection, I was going to say the same as Tony. I don't know how we fix it. I guess if I read IAS 21, IAS 29, put them together, I think it tells you what to do.
Yeah.
I think the reality is we don't like the answer. We don't think the answer shows the economics of what's really happening. Therefore, we need to change the standards. I just don't see how we can fix it. As I say, I don't think there's two ways to read the standard. I think the standard tells you exactly what to do. If we think that's not reflecting fair presentation, then that's an issue the board needs to address.
Almost goes to the language of the pension standard that says you have to use internally consistent assumptions. You can't make one assumption about interest rates and a different one about inflation or something like that. Laurence?
I agree with issuing an agenda decision, though I disagree with what Bruce says when he says the standard is clear. I don't think that the standard is clear in dealing with cases when you have exchangeability restrictions over the long term. Paragraph 26, which is key in IAS 21, has this assumption, as you rightly highlighted it in your paper, Anna, that normally if you have a problem of exchangeability, this is not for a very, very long time. Here, what is unique in this situation is that for Venezuela, it has been the case for years. And I do believe that the standard has not considered this type of situation where you have a lack of exchangeability for years. And so this is what I would like to see reflected in the agenda decision. That is to say, on those situations where you have had a lack of exchangeability for years, for a very long time, the standard is not clear.
Bonnie?
So I guess in maybe responding to some of the comments, I think the challenge from my perspective is this is a little, the situation in Venezuela is broader than what's contemplated here, and that's because different industries have different situations about what rates can be accessed, how much those rates can be accessed, whether that's for future purchases, whether that's for past purchases, and exactly how much can be brought out of the country. To Laurence's point, it's been a long-term situation as far as lack of ability to get cash out of the country. So I understand Martin's point on the economic reality. The challenge is that changes on a daily basis nearly. And so I guess from my perspective, this is more appropriately dealt with via disclosure than it is with drafting something that is very specific to this situation that could have unintended consequences for other situations, which inevitably will arise at some point in the future. So it is a challenge. It's a challenge from a prepare perspective, one that we have to deal with every quarter. And looking at what are the situations, monitoring it after the quarter end, even from a disclosure perspective. So I don't disagree with Martin that it is a challenge. I guess from my perspective, it's more appropriately dealt with via disclosure.
I'll get back to Martin in a minute here. Shelley, I want to ambush you here. There was an article in the New York Times maybe 2 weeks ago talking about a number of U.S. companies that have decided for one reason or another to take pretty significant hits in Venezuela. Is that because of the development of the new exchange rates, or what have you seen on that, if anything?
I didn't see the article, but we have addressed this recently.
Oh, sorry, I didn't turn on you.
We have addressed this recently. The Big Four came to us with a paper on the developments of the Kadivi and then the new SICAD rate and then the new that's the auction rate, and then the expanding of that to others. And so our guidance was to use the rate that you could justify. Prior guidance had been between the Kadivi and the black market, and our guidance had been, you know, don't use the black market rate. And so companies were looking to us to be able to come off of Kadivi, and we said, you know, use the rate that you think you can justify and disclose. So disclosure was our you know, main point there. So my guess is the write-downs were people coming off of Kadivi and going to the SICAD rate.
Yeah, that was my
sense of
the article.
Trying to get it more in line with economic reality. I think there was a lot of discomfort staying with the Kadivi rate through the years when they knew they couldn't get their money out at that rate, couldn't do transactions at that rate.
But they couldn't get the SICAD rate either.
But
it's difficult.
There
are some transactions,
I guess, closer
that are happening depending
the,
on
the real rate
cycle
to Martin's
two.
Point. So I think that they were just coming off of Kadivi going to SICAD, and that's where the losses were coming from. And and all our point was in our consultation with the Big Four was just disclose what you're doing.
Martin?
One remark probably to Tonya. You said there is no real diversity in practices. So, I mean, what I know is that although within one industry there's a huge diversity in practices, some use 60, some use 6.30 or something like this. So you see this and based on the same facts and circumstances, so to say. That's challenging. One could probably fix it with disclosures or so. And for sure it's a question of judgmental, but the potential outcome is widespread. On the other hand, again, I guess one should really consider the question, is it really possible for one country to have different exchange rates? Or do we have something different than just 3, 4, 5 exchange rate, but kind of government grant or subsidy? If that would be the case, then each and every company has to translate with more or less same rate or same idea, and we would probably get to at least to a certain point of comparison, and this at least could be discussed.
Determining the government grant, you have no basis, right?
Yeah, I mean,
the black market rate is illegal. Are you going to take something that is
illegal? You have the SICAD 2, and the black market rate. But for sure, CCAT2 currently is around 50 or so. Black market probably up to 80. Yeah. That means more or less I would expect to be somewhere in this kind of area, not in the area of 6 or so, which have, again, a huge impact on your whole P&L.
Tony?
Yeah, I'd want you to come back and say I've seen companies using CADIB or SEN-COEX, as it's called, and CCAD1 and CCAD2, but that reflects a judgment that management's made using the guidance in paragraph 26 of IS 21. It's not that there's diversity in how they think the standard works. It's just management making a different judgment about what rate they think they're going to be able to apply. And as Shelley said, the reason why there have been some fairly big charges in both the US GAAP and IFRS world is folks have said, hey, we now have CCAD 2. We think that's a better reflection of the economics. And it reflects what we think we will be able to get funds out at, or it's the closest approximation to the rate we'll be able to use if we can't get funds out. So my point was simply, I don't think there's, to agree with Hannah, I don't think there's an issue with the way people are currently applying that guidance in IAS 21, and then they're appropriately making disclosures. I do agree that there is a challenge that the standard does not address the issues of long-term exchangeability. And my observation there was that's simply, I think that's just beyond what this committee can do, because that's fairly major surgery to IS 21. Or if people think you shouldn't apply IS 29 when you've got fixed exchange rates, again, that's some fairly major surgery. I think it's beyond the scope of what this committee can do.
I am. Been persuaded. I used to think that you could fix these things one at a time, that these two have to go hand in hand. You can't, you're just going to create more problems if you try and fix price level adjusted accounting and ignore foreign currency or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we're in raging agreement.
Okay, so. Okay, well, I mean, we've probably covered a lot of issue two, but if you turn to paragraph 51 on page 14, I've outlined three different options for what to deal with where you've got lack of exchangeability. And I think what we have seen where there's lack of exchangeability, as has already been touched on, is there is some diversity in practice. Most people just try and use the rate that they think that technically they should qualify for. A few others that the feedback I've had is that they've taken the view that, well, none of these rates we can actually access, so let's use the one which gives us the better economic and truer answers to what we think we might be able to achieve when we can eventually remit the funds. For the same reasons that's already been discussed around the table, I think this is too broad to issue through an interpretation or an annual improvement. And so the options we came down to on, I think it's page 14, are not to take, option A is not to take the issue onto the committee's agenda, but just highlight this is an issue to the ISB, perhaps feed into the research projects. Option B is the same, but also highlighting that actually disclosure is key, and that there are existing disclosure requirements in IFRS, not specific to this particular issue, but they would apply if it's significant and affects you. So we think it's worthwhile highlighting that fact. And option C is, can we do something, take the bigger issue onto the agenda and say, look, is there a fix we can come up with here? That's workable and that we could put to the board to say, look, this would be an amendment to IS 21. Again, for the reasons that have already been discussed around the table, I don't think it would be easy to come up with that. And it's a bigger issue and interrelates with IS 29 on hyperinflation as well. So I've concluded that we should go for option B, which is to sort of acknowledge that yes, there is an issue, but we should reject, not take this onto the if the interpretations committee's agenda, but just highlight that these disclosure, existing disclosure requirements. Do you agree with that agenda decision?
I have a question I'd also like to introduce here, and maybe it goes to Alan about the flow of papers to the board or to the practitioners. Situation that the country says, congratulations, you can't have any of the money that you have here. Why doesn't that trigger impairment?
It might, Wayne, because if you have assets in Venezuela, for example, and you are continuing to generate cash flows in Venezuela, then those assets are going to be covered. Your investment in the subsidiary in Venezuela may be invested, may be impaired in the context of your separate financial statements, but on consolidation, that investment in the subsidiary gets
you were going to say.
Eliminated. And so what you have is a tension that says, IAS 29 has continued to inflate my balance sheet. I know I can't, if I get the money out into my presentation currency or parent company functional currency, I'm going to get less than that. But it's not impaired, or the assets in Venezuela aren't impaired, and it's also kind of hard to impair a cash balance because you have Venezuelan bolivars, you can do what you like with them in Venezuela. It's just that if you ever manage to extract them, you won't get the amount you've currently got recorded in your presentation currency, and that's why I think companies have made disclosures, why the SEC has reinforced the message that they should make clear disclosures about the consequences of the raid.
By a Jesuit, were you?
Sorry?
That's a series of distinctions that a Jesuit would love. Bruce?
I was just going to comment exactly on that. There was a quick fix we did in South Africa with the Zimbabwean companies. We just stopped consolidating them. I mean, basically, we said the restriction on cash, we couldn't get money out. There were, you know, it became almost impossible, so we stopped the consolidation.
Yeah, I was aware of that.
Yeah.
You probably don't, you don't control in some sense as well.
That's exactly what we said. So we just used all these reasons and said, we'll stop consolidation.
Bonnie?
So maybe to that point, I would say there are three issues, main issues that I think you deal with in Venezuela. One is consolidation or deconsolidation. I know that was one of the topics that was brought to the SEC as well. What rate do you use to translate your financial statements? And then also whether or not you have any impairment issues. I think it's completely facts and circumstances specific. I think on the deconsolidation issue, I think the challenge would be the situation changes rapidly, and whether or not you really have control, in my perspective, is subject to a variety of things that depends on the industry and whether or not you really can continue production in the case of a manufacturer, or whether you can continue to operate in some way, even though there is a somewhat lack of exchangeability that, depending on the quarter, could be you could get money out, you may not be able to get money out. So I think that's a challenging one, because at what point do you trip, and at what point is that trigger, and then at what point do you then trigger it back? And you could get some flip-flopping depending on what's happening in the quarter, and I don't think that would represent faithfully what's actually going on. Maybe to the specific question at hand, I guess I would say option B, but I would say there's also maybe a option D, which is, I think to Lawrence's point, the long-term lack of exchangeability, that's really not addressed anywhere in the standards, and so maybe that's something to consider as far as maybe some of the other projects that the board has on its agenda to look at.
Yeah, I mean, that would be part of option B, yeah.
Andrew?
Yeah, I also agree with the staff recommendation for option B. On the impairment question, I don't care what Tony says, we do the impairment calculations in bolivars, which is the interaction between IAS 36 and IAS 21. The consolidation question, that's also come up to us, and we haven't concluded that what's happening in Venezuela does lead to deconsolidation in any situation that I'm aware of, but you know, the government is intervening in things like price controls in other ways in Venezuela, so that is leading to these questions coming up.
Tony?
I was going to also agree with the staff's recommendation. I think that option B is the right way to go for all of the reasons that we've talked about around the table. I agree that deconsolidation might be an issue, but I think that's separate. That's a case of looking at what IFRS 10 says. I don't think that's the same as this issue. I guess it was a question I think you were about to ask, maybe ask Alan, is if long-term exchangeability is a big issue, I think we are saying that that is a big issue. Is it something the board is going to be able to deal with or begin to think about in the short term?
Yeah. Hannah's been doing a little bit of work on these general issues anyway, and I think, please jump in if I say the wrong thing, but I think the idea is that it's a research project. We're trying to identify what major problems there are or there might be with IAS 21. Long-term exchangeability is one. Perhaps the issue that Koreans have came to us is that they've got long-term contracts and they're worried that the current rate is not reflective of future rates, which is a slightly different issue. But I guess what we're trying to do is document these issues so that we have a research report, in essence, that would be ready in time for the agenda consultation 2015, because it's not us rushing to a solution. It's trying to document and understand what problems are worth having a look at, and then have a look, you know, say these have been around for a long time. You're going to have to weigh these against other issues, what's more urgent and so on. So it's so you can make a more informed contribution to the agenda consultation time than simply say long-term exchange rates, and we don't really know what the issue is.
John?
I mean, I agree with the recommendation. I'd like to be able to say we committee could take it on and do something about the long-term lack of exchangeability, but I don't think, I think it would just, it opens up too many other issues in other standards, so I don't really think it's a committee project. It would be, I mean, I think it would be good if the board could, I mean, putting it on a research project sort of concerns me in terms of the time scale to try and put in a solution, but I don't see a real quick fix, so I don't know that, I certainly don't think the committee can do it, so I agree with it. I agree with the recommendation.
I think one thing that might be helpful, Michael, when you do your update of the board, that you make it a point to observe that all of the committees said these standards are interacting with one another in ways that produce odd and unusual results. I hesitate to say uneconomic, but certainly inconsistent results. So the board is aware of that. Martin, last call.
No, it's more a question. If we come out with option B, then the issue whether IRS 29 should be applicable under specific situations, this will be still on our agenda, or which we will still discuss on the next meeting or so. Or do we say no? We have an agenda rejection, so therefore we do not discuss the whole complex IRS 21 and interaction with IRS 29 at all.
I guess the difficulty, I understand your frustration. I hear to be frustration. 29 tells you what hyperinflation is. If you meet it, you apply the standard. It's not voluntary. So what could we do that... What could this committee do to say, under these circumstances, don't do what the standard says, which is essentially what you're asking us to do? I'm not sure that's not in our ability. I'm not sure the board would be willing to do that, given that the pressure that we're receiving, especially from Latin America, is to do more price level adjusted accounting, not less. So I understand your frustration, but I don't know that it's something that this group can do anything about.
Yeah, but I mean, specifically in other countries like Argentina or so, you have more or less a convertible exchange rate. So you are not in this issue that they have, a fixed exchange rate for over a year, and which is not free convertible. So we are, in all these other countries, we are in a different situation. And there I would say, no, it's absolutely right to apply IRIS 29, and there is no way out. The only thing, I guess, one could consider whether it is necessary for the application of IRIS 29 that you have a convertible exchange rate.
It simply doesn't say that.
And I don't think this committee has the power to introduce words into a standard. I think that's just too broad of an issue. It just simply doesn't say it.
Philippe?
I think the only thing the board could do is to say you suspend the application of 29 when certain conditions of 21 are not met. That would be a kind of regulatory action, in a way. I don't know what would be the consequences of doing that. It's easy to say. It's probably not that easy to decide in which conditions we could suspend 29. But.
Okay. I've heard support. I've heard support for the staff paper. So I think that's what we'll do, unless somebody has an objection. And we will communicate, Michael will communicate frustration. Alan and Sue would. Philippe and Jean-Luc can
also express frustration.
Also tell them how frustrated people are. All right. Anna, anything else on this one?
No, that's all for me. Thank you.
That concludes our technical discussion and the public portion of our meeting. We'll now go into administrative session. Ask our observers from the public to excuse themselves. IASB staff is welcome to stay if they wish.